Hello, hello. It's Ari Rosenbaum with another fun-packed episode of that 401k podcast. The 401k podcast like no other. This week's episode, before I bring Dan on, we're going to talk about the mistakes that too many 401k financial advisors make in their practice with their clients and why they really shouldn't make these mistakes. So it's going to be an interesting episode, just, you know, talking, Dan and I talking about our experiences. And of course, before we get on with Dan Venturi from Brightworks, I just wanted to mention that 401k conference. The next one, Philadelphia, Citizens Bank Park, Friday, November 9th, $75 right now for the early bird special. Great event for 401k advisors, 4 hours of content. Lunch, stadium tour, meet and greet with Larry Anderson, who's the radio voice of the Phillies, was a former Philly, was also a former Red Sox. Of course, the Red Sox traded some prospect by the name of Jeff Bagwell to get him, but maybe we'll mention that. And, of course, Tommy Lasorda's friend, the Philly fanatic, will be there as well. Seats still available, one or two sponsorships still available. We hope you can be there. Dan will be there. It's a great event, great time, great memories. And again, we're going to do that. And we got some other ones planned as well. And we're here back with our good friend Dan Venturi from Brightworks. Dan, how are you?
I'm great, Ari. Looking forward to getting past this Monday's filing deadline.
Yeah, we recorded a week in advance, so today's the 12th one we record, and the 15th is around the corner. And for anybody who doesn't really know, Dan's in the TPA business, and there's this little thing called, the final deadline to the 5500 after the extension.
Yep. Little is an understatement.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
We're getting that wrapped up. Still licking my wounds from my Yankee defeat earlier in the week, but... Them's the breaks.
You know what? Boston's a better team. They tried their best. Boone's made some questionable calls, but it is what it is. At least they're better than my Mets. So I just looked on Facebook and it was like 3 years to the day. I went to Citi Field to see them play the Dodgers in the divisional series, and I'm like, geez, it feels like 20 years ago.
I remember that.
Yeah, it feels like 20 years ago.
Well, here's looking at March.
And yeah, the 401k exactly.
Conference in Tampa.
Exactly, and hopefully Dodger Stadium in February. We're trying for that one. So how was your week? Otherwise, Ravine. What?
Chavez Ravine. That'd be nice.
That would be nice. We're working on it, and hopefully we'll announce something for February.
Do you know that's the third oldest park in Major League Baseball?
That's the scary thing, but it's absolutely true. Once they got rid of Tiger Stadium, Yeah.
Oh, old Tiger Stadium, old Comiskey, Cleveland? Cleveland Park? Cleveland
Stadium? Municipal Stadium, Memorial Stadium in Baltimore.
Memorial Stadium.
Yeah. So, it's true, because Dodger Stadium opened in 62.
Yeah. 62.
Yeah, they opened played a couple years at Memorial Coliseum, which had to be the weirdest thing. Especially with some of the fences, it was like 200 something feet.
Well, remember what they told us at Wrigley, where there were no walls?
Right.
There were ropes.
It's true. Speaking of Wrigley, I just got in the mail from Andre Dawson's agent a picture of, if you could see it on LinkedIn and on Twitter, it's a picture of me and, Andre and I, and Andre autographed it, and it's to Ari, thanks for a great event, so it's kind of cool.
Nice.
So that was fun.
I caught a Cubs broadcast that had Andre Dawson in the booth.
Oh, really?
It was one of those ESPN games, late in the season, and he was up in the booth.
No, it's pretty funny. He's now one of my new favorite players. So he was always a good, good guy, but even more so now. So you got the 5500s next. I talked about initially in the intro that 401k conference is in about 3 weeks in Philly. So that should be fun. And let's go to today's discussion, which is mistakes that advisors, 401k financial advisors, make with their clients, make with their practice, all the mistakes that they can make. I just recently wrote an article about it, so I wanted your take on some of the things that I've seen, because as a consultant back in the day, you've seen these mistakes.
I probably made some of them.
I wouldn't admit to that. But, you know, as long as you learn from your mistakes, I think that's really the biggest thing. But when it comes to advisors making mistakes, I always think that the biggest one that they do is – first off, not understanding what a third-party administrator does, and you know, picking the cheapest provider, just seeing that the TPA is really a price point in their way of calculating how much it's all-in is going to cost the plan sponsor, and not realizing that plan design is like such a big thing. And to me, that's like number one on my list.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, it goes in a couple of different directions. I think you could take it. You know, a good TPA is a servicing platform. You know, that frees up a ton of advisors' time to be doing what they really want to do, right? I don't think very many advisors want to spend all their day servicing plans, dealing with participant questions. All that stuff can be offloaded to a TPA, and that frees up your time.
Yeah, I mean... Absolutely, because advisors do much more than just advisory work. They're the most trusted plan provider for the plan sponsor client. So when things go wrong, plan sponsors are very passive aggressive. If they got a problem with the TPA, they contact the advisor to see what the heck is going on. And you know, when you hire a bad TPA, you know, it really puts a lot more on the plate for the advisor to handle stuff that really they don't have the background to do it.
Yeah. I mean, you want your TPA to be a part of your team, right? You don't want a TPA that sits there and says, that's not my job. I do the 5,500, I do the testing, and that's it. You know, that TPA, and if when you find it, it's like, you know, maybe a good marriage is a strong term, but it's like a really good friend, right? I mean, there's a give and a take there. You support each other. You have each other's back. The TPA will never throw the advisor under the bus. The advisor is not going to throw the TPA under the bus. You know, each of them have their lanes to stay in, but it solidifies that relationship with the client. And to your point, Ari, it lessens the, hey, what the heck's going on here? Right, if the TPA is on point doing what they're supposed to be doing, the advisor's not getting those calls.
Yeah, I mean, back in the old days, prior to fee disclosure, I always saw advisors more interested in, especially brokers, what's my trail? How do I get paid? That's all I really consider. And I think the marketplace has changed, where the advisor can't really just recommend anybody. They have to understand that, you know what? Every plan has a different fit, and I think that plan design is something that advisors really need to understand, that you know the right TPA can help the plan sponsor minimize required contributions and then maximize contributions to the highly compensated employees. You know, I've been to too many plan reviews where the TPA didn't bother to tell the client, you know what, yeah, you've been failing the ADP test for a couple of years. Why don't you know, go with a safe harbor plan design, that sort of thing. You know, and it happens not as often as it used to, but it still happens where, you know, especially when they're picking a payroll provider TPA that really isn't doing their job, that doesn't do a lot of hand-holding, it really puts the advisor in a really bad spot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ideally, you don't want a client thinking about the 401k plan, maybe outside of testing time and audit season. Right? If the plan sponsor is fixating on the plan, you should be pretty confident that there's a problem somewhere, and that relationship's going to be in jeopardy. at some point.
Well, absolutely. And that goes to my next point. You know, when it comes to when an advisor gets fired, one of the oddest ways they get fired is when they bring in the wrong GPA. I talk about this story all the time. When I was working for a producing TPA, we had a very good advisor that we worked with in the southern part of the United States, and they referred us into an architectural firm. And right from the get-go, it was not a good fit because we weren't doing what the previous TPA was doing, and the human resources director at the company was really upset because the previous TPA did a lot of her work. And so she was against us from the get-go, and she wanted to get us fired in the worst way. So they had somebody come in and talk about a KSOP and use that feature. And, really it's an ESOP portion and a 401k. It's really a 401k plan with an opportunity to buy stock. And I knew about it. And, of course, as a TPA, they sent the boss in, and the boss didn't do a great job in presenting about it instead of sending me. And we got fired. And the biggest problem was the advisor got fired as well.
Yeah.
You know.
Just like in sports, very rarely does a pitching coach stay if the manager gets dumped, right? They chase them all.
Except for Rube Walker, who was the pitching coach for the Mets for about 13 years, and he was through. He started, I think, with Gil Hodges, Yogi Berra, Joe Frazier, Roy McMillan, pretty much, and Joe Torre. And then finally, when Torre got fired, Rube Walker got fired. But usually,
well, isn't the Yankees pitching coach a holdover?
No, Dave Island? Not Dave Island. Dave Island's with the Mets now. Who's the pitching coach now? I don't even know.
Oh, Jesus Christmas. This is going to bother me. He was Girardi's pitching coach.
Larry Rothschild, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, well, he's a holdover. Yeah.
Yes.
But usually, usually you get fired. Stottlemyre, I think, with the Mets, at least he was with Bud Harrelson, and then he eventually got fired. And then Greg Pavlik. But, yeah, usually that's what happens. You brought in, they usually get fired. But there are, exceptions to the rule. And Rube Walker is the perfect example of that. There's some really crappy teams towards the end of his run.
Well, the Mets have had an illustrious history of some crappy teams.
Well, I mean, he started with Seaver and Kuzma, and then he ended his career with Craig Swan and, Randy Jones and Mark Bomback or whatever. So, whatever. Referring the wrong TPA is a good way to get fired, and I think that's why the advisor really has to understand the value of a good TPA and plan design and less compliance mistakes and all that kind of stuff. Another thing I find that too many advisors do is they put too much emphasis on the funds that they pick. Not understanding that when it comes to participant directed plans, that's not really a big selling point.
Yeah. Well, 404C, right?
Yeah. That's the big thing. So
there's no liability there in terms of performance. So, to your point, yeah, let's not oversell it. I mean, I'd be more conscious of making sure you get institutionally priced investments in there rather than have some overpriced, retirement share classes or something on the on the retail side.
Yeah, I mean, perfect example. I worked years ago when I was at that semi-prestigious law firm. I worked with a union client. And they had a trustee-directed money purchase plan, and the broker was a star. He bleached his hair blonde. He really had a way. He thought he was a superstar. But when you give advice and you pick out the investments, and the trustees direct their own investments, and you have a great rate of return, well, then maybe you are a superstar. But, if this was a participant 401k plan, I would have told, hey, Joe, you're not such a star. Anybody really can you know, with a background out of 7,000 mutual funds can pick, 12 to 15.
Sure. Absolutely.
And speaking Absolutely. About speaking about 12 to 15, this is a segue, but recently I wrote a piece about it. Fidelity got sued on their 401k plan again. Using too many proprietary funds. They only use Fidelity funds. But the most shocking thing of all, they have 243 investment options in their 401k plan.
Oh my God, in their own 401k plan?
Exactly, 243. And if you want to talk about fiduciary breach, they'll never come to say this, but I always believe the more funds you have, in a sense, is a fiduciary breach in the sense that, you know, studies have shown that too many funds depress participant turnout and deferral rates because people are, overwhelmed. And Absolutely. I guess the assumption is if you work for Fidelity, you know a thing or two about mutual funds, but I'm sure there are a lot of people in those offices that don't have any, financial backgrounds.
Yeah.
You know, secretaries, security staff.
Absolutely. Exactly. Absolutely.
But yeah,
to your point, though, and not to throw another provider under the bus, but the Hancock plan has a ton of funds as well. I think they've got like 70 or 75 funds in one of their platforms.
I saw one, it was a Hancock plan, so it wasn't Hancock themselves, but it was a Hancock plan where there were like 57 investment options. And to me, that's a really bad thing. Just because it confuses confuses plan participants, they don't defer, and defeats the whole purpose of having a 401k plan where you're supposed to increase turnout. But I think advisors, when thinking about participant director 401k plans and how they market to clients, I think they put too much emphasis on the investments they pick. On a 338 setting, you're pretty much picking passive investments anyway, index funds.
Sure.
So it really makes no sense to put too much emphasis on your prowess in picking funds when ultimately, it's the plan participants who are going to decide, what kind of funds they're going to use in their plan. And I always tell the story when I was working at that semi-prestigious law firm, somebody in their office, one of the file guys or whatever, he's like, oh, I put all my money in with the mid-cap fund because it's the middle of the market. So when you're picking out funds, it doesn't really mean anything if you have participants who have that belief. That if you use a mid-cap fund, it represents the like a blend of the entire stock market. And I didn't really have the heart to tell the guy that he was completely wrong, and I really didn't have the financial background to tell him that he was absolutely making the biggest mistake of his life.
Sure. Well, the other thing, too, is, most advisors, most folks these days, and for a while, right, the QDIA, the target date funds are where the majority of the assets end up anyway.
Yeah, it's changed. It's changed a lot, that's been a very good thing. But there are still advisors, with the some of their blended funds, the baskets of funds, they put too much emphasis on it and what they're pushing rather than the end result, which is the participants are actually the ones directing our investments. And it's great you pick funds, but if you have plan participants who are still putting it all in stable value. And like I said, like my friend in the file room doing 100% mid-cap, it doesn't really matter. So, that's one way. I just think that they really don't understand.
Well, I don't know if this is on the list, Ari, but that speaks to an opportunity for advisors to pivot over into more education, more wellness, right?
That's the final one on my list because I think that's the one where I think that advisors really – don't emphasize, and we'll certainly talk about that. But first, in hand about picking funds, too many advisors not really understanding their role in helping manage the fiduciary process. I think that picking funds, it's great, but with me with the basic background, I think I could pick a good fund lineup. I can read a Morningstar profile too and an FI360 report.
Sure.
But they don't understand, too many advisors don't understand that Their job ultimately is to minimize the fiduciary liability of their the plan sponsor. That's their role. As an ERISA attorney, that's the role when I'm dealing with plan sponsor clients. That's the role of a TPA.
Not 316. You know,
right. Yeah, exactly. A 316. Not landing the plan sponsor in a whole host of trouble. And, you know, too many advisors, I mean, not so much anymore. But there were, and there probably still are, I used to call them milk carton advisors, because these were typically brokers who never saw their client and they were missing to the point where they should have been put on a milk carton because the client never saw them. I always talk about a story. Years ago, I was asked to do one of those retirement tune-ups for $750 that nobody wants to spend money on. But I did one for a medical practice in Pennsylvania, and they had a broker who was getting 60 basis points on a $14 million plan. And, you know,
60, how many?
60 basis points on a $14
million.
60. Yeah, that was about 5-6 years ago. Before, you know, the world came to an end and everybody's making 25 basis points or 20.
Yeah.
So he was a broker, never met with the client, never did any fiduciary review, never sat with down with them and discussed an investment policy statement. There were no plan education materials. There was nothing. And I said to the plan sponsor, which was a medical practice, I said, you know, you can hire somebody for a lot less who's going to do a lot more. And so they actually hired a 338. Who came in and was doing it for 25 bips. So right then and there, they saved more half in the expenses on the advisory side, and then also got the help that they actually needed. I said, you know, one thing is to pay, you know, you can always pay an advisor 60 basis points, but if they're, you know, on a $14 million plan, they better wear white gloves and do some, you know, hand-holding and, I don't know, massages or something, you know, really.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, you know, if you really want that kind of treatment, but, you know, he was getting 60 basis points and he was MIA.
The least he could have done is shown up with some donuts and coffee.
He never showed up. Forget about the donuts and coffee. You know.
And what a world.
But, you know, there are a lot of advisors like that who really didn't understand the changing dynamic of fiduciary liability and discussions of fiduciary processes and all that. And I always tell a funny story. Years ago, you know, I'm good friends with James Holland from Millennium. And years ago, I had a broker who had ran into him and got upset that, you know, James was pushing 338. And I think the broker said, oh, 338, that's just marketing. I'm like, really? I mean, everything in life is just marketing. But a 338 versus a broker who wasn't a fiduciary, yeah, it's a lot more than marketing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so much of all this is perspective, at least in front of a client, right?
Right.
I mean, they're the ultimate decision maker on it. We're just trying to figure out a way to influence their opinion.
No, absolutely. And, you know, more and more advisors are still, you know, are understanding what they need to do. And, you know, that's part of my practice. It's always been for the last 8 years, advisors who want to get into the business, advisors, you know, reach out and call me and, you know, whether they need a service agreement or just a question, I'm always here for them. But, you know, there still are brokers out there that really don't understand what they're supposed to do for their client. And it's amazing, but it's true. There's a lot of, I call them Barney Fife advisors. There still are there. You know, Barney Fife was the deputy on Andy Griffith's show, but, you know, he had one unspent bullet in a pocket. So when I call a Barney Fife advisor, that to me is somebody who's got like one plan on their...
One client, yeah.
Yeah, one or two, and, you know, they just probably did it as a favor. Because, you know, they were, you know, managing the money of somebody, a decision maker. So the guy said, oh, why don't you handle my 401k plan? But there still are people like that. And so they really need to understand that there is a process in place. And their role isn't to be a superstar, you know, the next second coming of Peter Lynch. They got to be, you know, guys and gals who can actually, you know, go in there and develop an IPS, sit with the client, review the funds, make sure that the investment options are still applicable to the criteria set in the IPS, and, you know, educating plan participants. And getting them ready and getting them involved. But, you know, it is what it is.
All those guys, all the folks that have one or two plans, you should definitely be reaching out to Ari. You should be reaching out to us. Get a 316 involved. Get an IRS attorney involved. It'll make your lives a lot easier and it'll limit your liabilities. There's real liability associated with all this stuff. It's not, Tari's point, as laissez-faire, let's say, as it was even 5 years ago. People are looking at this stuff. The government's looking at it. The DOL, the IRS are looking at it. Plaintiff's attorneys are looking at it. So it's just, it's a lot safer for you and your client to, you know, team up with folks that do this day in and day out and know how to avoid the pitfalls.
It's easier to lose a client than to gain one, and that's what I've always been saying. So you want to try to minimize losing a client because it's so much harder to get one to replace that one. And we all know that from experience.
Agreed.
And next on my list is not working with other providers and using their resources. I think there are too many advisors that think that they're an island to themselves and don't realize that there are other plan providers that could help them out one way or the other, whether it's a TPA that can sit with them on sales meetings with potential clients and doing plan reviews and plan design formulas that would better suit the client, or with an ERISA attorney, or, you know, just really any other plan provider out there. Fund companies, the DCIO rep always has a bag of tools and is always a resource to help a advisor out. And, you know, as long as they don't abuse the help, it's always there. And, you know, the help is there for the asking. And I think there are too many advisors that don't ask.
No, agreed. I mean, you can... somebody's always sponsoring some event somewhere. There's always a DCIO that's doing a conference, or a record keeper that's doing a conference, or a TPA, or, you know, in Ari's case, the 401k conferences that he produces. So there's always a place to go out and not only network, but, you know, find those resources that you need that add value to the to your business, to your practice, to what you're delivering to a plan sponsor. You know, it could be an idea, it could be some sort of wellness approach, something to do with plan participants to increase their participation. There's always something out there. There's always something that someone might have repackaged or thought differently from what you might have heard before. That'll spark something for you and could potentially lead to retaining a client or hopefully winning a client.
Right. Exactly. The resources are there for the taking. And again, it goes back to the days when I first started speaking out at these 401k recon events, and you're hearing speeches from DCIO reps willing to help advisors out. And it's there. And, you know, as with anything, don't abuse it. And, you know, whether it's, you know, there's some guidance tools, there's some benchmarking databases that they can allow you to have access. And again, TPAs are always a great help with plan design. And really, how did I start my practice? One of the greatest things that I ever had was working with Rich Lorita, who was a salesperson for a TPA I worked at. And he would go with the advisor, and he would bring me along because poor Rich, as much as I loved him, he couldn't spell 401k if you spot him before the O, the 1, and the K. He was great at sales. And with the advisor, you know, they would bring me on board to help out the advisor in bagging the business and then making the changeover to us as a TPA. And, you know, that's really how I started. And, you know, other plan providers could be excellent tools and mechanisms in order to generate more business and to obviously to keep business and from losing clients. So, you know, that's what it's there for. And last but not least, and I think that it's really something that too many advisors give really short attention, and that's really not interacting with plan participants. Dan, I don't know about you, but I've been to a lot of enrollment meetings that, you know, I found funerals a lot more interesting than plan enrollment meetings.
Sat in a lot of lunchrooms waiting for participants. It got to be so boring that I stopped bringing in provider enrollers, and I just started doing it myself. So I enjoy them when I do them. I, to your point, want to stab my eyes out when someone else doesn't.
It's always done in the same way. It's like they talk. I mean, it's just boring as hell. I mean, yeah. People don't show up, and it's just like. It's like I want to pull a teeth out of my mouth.
Yeah, no, it's awful. It's awful. Now, that said, I've had some meetings where, you know, attendance is mandatory. It's actually fun, and I try and engage the participants to get them involved just so it's not boring for me. But it's a great opportunity to demonstrate worth to a plan sponsor. If you're out there and you're speaking to participants and you're passionate about what you're saying and you get a message across to them, you can go back to that plan sponsor and say, hey, you know, this 3-4% spike in participation, that's what I brought to the table here. You know, so it's a great way to show your value.
I really think that that's something, number one thing that I think that plan advisors really don't understand is you need to talk to plan participants on their level. One of the reasons that I got any type of popularity, and I use that term loosely, and I don't know what popular means, especially when it comes to risk attorneys, I wrote articles that were written in English, that weren't written in overseas. I wasn't trying to press anybody. I was trying to talk to plan sponsors and plan providers in a language that they can understand. And I think that when you're dealing with plan participants, too many advisors talk over their heads. They need to keep it basic to make them understand, you know, basic concepts of investment education. It's all about a connection business. And, you know, whether it's pro wrestling or any type of business, you have to connect with the audience. And I think there are too many advisors who just don't really understand that an audience of decision makers from a plan are a little bit different than decision makers that are plan participants. And to me, I recently wrote a blog piece where I talk about that 401k conference and you know, when the ideas emanated from the fact that when I was at my old synagogue, I came up with this crazy idea to bring Sal's stockbroker into my synagogue. You know, it helped that, you know, Doug Goodstein was a good friend of mine and he used to work on the Stern Show. But I had this crazy idea. Let's do something different. The synagogue would always do these Monte Carlo nights, or there'd be a journal dance, or it would be a goods and services auction. And they would always have the same 30 to 50 people show up, no matter what. You could have had it could have been anything. You could have had a cheeseburger night. You still would have gotten 50 people at the synagogue. That's the way it was. And I said, you know what? Let's get support from outside the community, outside the synagogue. Their money is just as good, if not better, than membership money, because membership money isn't as limiting, because members only have so much money. So I said, let's have this event. We had 200 people come in, and I want to say 150 people weren't from the synagogue. And, you know, their money, it was good. It was a great event. It was something unique. And that's where that 401k conference came from, that idea. Let's do something different. Let's go to a stadium. Let's not only talk about 401k stuff, let's talk about, you know, baseball, and let's bring in an athlete, and let's have a stadium tour, and let's offer something unique. And so somebody could say, you know, it's a little bit different than, you know, the rubber chicken at the Sheraton or the Hilton that I usually, the DCIO guy brings me to. It's something different and unique. And I think that that's the way advisors have to approach enrollment meetings. You know, have it turn into a game show or something. Offer gift cards as prizes.
Sure.
Make it interesting. Make it exciting. It doesn't have to be as boring as heck. And by engaging plan participants in a positive manner, it's only going to help the advisor out because it's going to have more participation in the plan, more assets, which equals more money, but more important, it's a great metric to the advisor to show, hey, look, I'm doing my job. You know, 20% participated, now it's 35%. I mean, that's huge. That's a big difference.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's return on investment for the plan sponsor.
Yeah, you know, it's something different, unique. I mean, you know, when I write my articles, you know, there'll be also these cultural allusions in there and some other stuff, and it gets people interested and they'll read it. But if I talked like if I wrote articles like this ERISA partner I worked at some union law firm, I mean, it bore the crap out of people. It would get a readership from a bunch of other ERISA attorneys, but in terms of making connections with advisors and plan sponsors, it never would have done that. So I think that, you know, my last, you know, advice is for advisors to really understand that you need to engage plan participants because so many advisors don't. And it's a positive experience and can really get the participants behind you and more involved in the plan.
That's the ultimate goal.
You got any other things for the list?
Do I have any other things for the list? Just going back to probably the first thing that we had talked about. You know, as an advisor, you're the sharp point of the spear, but you want a team with you. You want to bring competent folks with you that can share the load, handle the servicing, deal with the participants to an extent, the extent that you guys dictate in most instances, and ultimately let you guys find more business. I think that's the most important thing. And leverage, Ari's point earlier, leverage every contact you have. I mean, certain fund guys have more budgets than others, so be cognizant of that. But TPAs have budgets too. Partner with a TPA. Get an event sponsored somewhere.
TPAs are great for sales meetings. I mean, we would, you know, I know so many advisors that would bring us on board to attend the meeting, and we would help close the deal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Have an event, you know, a happy hour. I mean, whatever it is, you know, go-karting, whatever you want to do. Those TPAs are willing to share those costs with you. So, ask the question.
I always say when it comes, in conclusion, when it comes to working with other plan providers, I used to always have this funny joke when I used to do these 401k recon events, and it goes back to one of my favorite Rodney Dangerfield movies, Back to School. And as Thornton Mellon, who owned the big Toll and Fat store, he would say, if you want to look thin, surround yourself with fat people. And I always say, if you want to look smart in the 401k plan business, you know, surround yourself with people who are, you know, really smart when it comes to ERISA. It is only going to rub off on the advisor. You bring in a TPA, TPAs at your beck and call, a ERISA attorney you can talk to. It just makes it look like your advisory services are just a lot more by being able to leverage the help when you need it.
Couldn't agree with you more.
So I think that's it for this week. Until next week, was it same bat time, same bat channel?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Well, have a good folks. Have a good time, guys.
And, you know, we'll talk to Dan after he survives October 15th.
Yes, I'll be much more lucid next week. I promise.
Take care. Bye.
Wake up, kid. It's 5:30. The youth ain't nothing really changing but the dates. You a grand slammer, but you know Babe Ruth. You gotta learn how to relate. I heard you swinging from the pearly gate. I got all the answers. Lo and behold, you got the right key, baby, but the wrong key. Ho, yo. again about all those things you said, about all the negative people and how to make you sick. And if calling names kicks back on you, then I hope this does the trick. Because I'm feeling you complaining about how many bills, and I'm sick of all your bitching about your meals and your pills, and I just can't be no hero about your way of life. And I think I can do more for you if you're here talking now. Eat the rest. There's only one thing I'm begging for. Eat the rest. I think one by now, I'll come back for.